Welcome to a series of podcasts about Brexit and European artists living in the UK. I'm Karen Glossop from Wishbone, and I have with me here David Furlong.
Hello.
Hi. So David, you're originally from Mauritius. You trained at the National Theatre of Chaillot in Paris, where you went on to work with some international stars such as Deborah Warner and Michel Lopez. You've worked throughout France in rep, performing in the French classics like Molière. And you moved to London in 2004 and started performing in English, your second language. You've gone on to write theatre shows and to direct as well. In fact, you're on the Stage Directors UK mentoring programme with Phelan McDermott as your mentor.
Yes.
But I'm really curious about how you came via Mauritius to France and then to England. What was your journey through that?
Well, first, Mauritius is a very interesting country because it's a former French colony and then British colony up until 1968. And it's made of 70% of the population is Indian diaspora, so it's Indian roots. And also we're part of the African continent. All of these informations are a very diverse base for an identity. And also, it's what happened in every colony, we all look up to Europe. So for part of the population, it's more France, for others, it's more England, the UK. Me personally, it was a bit of both. My dad was very towards France. In fact, he was a diplomat posted in France for a while. And my mum was English speaking and very turned towards the UK. So this is how I grew up in this multiplicity of influences. And even like on very concrete things, like I grew up with my mum doing English breakfast and my mum and my dad feeding me Charles Trenet as a childhood singer.
That's quite a combination.
Yeah. And then I started drama. You never come back from this.
No.
Really. So yeah, I started being a theatre actor. I studied in France. But that the what's interesting is that I was becoming a very French actor, and then later on I knew that this English side of me, this sort of subject of the crown within me, was there somewhere, and that's why I came to London to pursue this. And also, there's something very interesting is that in France, because of the history of the country, the cultural diversity is mainly towards Northern Africa.
Algeria,
Morocco. And because of my features, basically, I could easily play these parts. But I felt a fraud to my own identity. I thought, well, this is not really me. I'm 25% Indian. And if there's... At the point I was in my 20s, if there's something that I want to explore is this. And because of the stories of both countries, so here you have more space and places to explore Indian roots and non-Western sort of vigorous storytelling traditions.
Ironically, so everything.
Yes, so exactly. It's moving so I can get to be everything that I already am. In a way. And I was about to say, ironically, these kind of work started with Peter Brook in the 70s, and now he's doing it in France.
Mm. So you don't feel pinned down or pegged down to any kind of particular identity, and that's all been seamless?
There are many things that are sort of unconscious within you and that are totally cultural. And so it's never really easy. But what becomes easier is that you start living in this zone of multiplicity. So you start sort of warm up to it. Like a dancer who does a stretch, it will never hurt if he's well warmed up in it, like if it's part of him. Well, I think it's a comparison, an analogy that I use a lot.
It's a nice one. I like it.
Yeah. Mm. So I'm now at ease with those stretches within me. I am, but not everyone is around you. People want to put you in boxes.
Isn't that as a person or as an artist?
Both. It's very interesting because that's the differences between France and the UK, for example. In France, people like to understand exactly what you do as an artist. Your identity is kind of not so important. Of course, there is racism and all the intolerance that you can find anywhere else. But there is something about the French Republican mold.
Yes.
And, you know, everyone is equal, égalité, fraternité. This is all very important and you feel it in the society, I think. But when it comes to work and you talk to someone, they like to identify what you do.
Not so much liberté.
Yeah, not so much liberté, in a way, yeah.
So, that's very interesting about how the European culture and how people have your relationship with that has shaped what you've done as an artist. I'm wondering whether the EU itself has actually enabled you in any way as a performer or an artist in other respects when you're writing or directing.
I guess this is one of the most important thing is that this geographical fluidity that is part of the European Union, it's crucial because especially as artists, that's what we need. We need this mobility.
Yeah. I'm wondering if you're a French national, does that mean that you weren't able to vote in the referendum in 2016?
On the day of the referendum, I could vote because I'm a Commonwealth citizen as a Mauritian person. One day you're allowed to vote in a country where you've been for 14 years and you're allowed to vote for the first time. So you really feel part of this country. Mm-hmm. And also I have a kid here and she was born here. She's six. She's growing up here. She's a little English London girl. And so I was so proud to be allowed to vote in, of course. And then on the next day, basically the same country, I'm putting like one big label on something that is made of many, many different people and opinions, but this is the feeling I got. The same country was telling me, you're foreign.
Out.
It's very traumatic in a way.
Mm.
Interestingly, when I was 16 in France, the same thing sort of happened because the ministre de l'Intérieur,
is that the Home Office?
Yeah, that's France, the French, yeah. Home Office. It was a right-wing government. It was Chirac. And the ministry of the Home Office was very right-wing, called Charles Pasqua. And Charles Pasqua made that law that people who were born on French soil, which I was before going back to live in Mauritius, had to ask before their majority, between 16 and 18, to be French. So it wasn't the right of the land naturally, as it is in the constitution. Like, this is very, very important in France. And so suddenly there was this batch of people like me for 4 years, sort of between 94 to 98, who suddenly were told, oh, by the way, you're not French anymore, you have to ask. We'll give it to you, but you have to make the to approach the state. And then the law was abolished.
So the UK doesn't have a premium on jingoism. Actually, it's in fact more than 18 months since the Brexit vote. And since then, I feel there's been an increasing lack of clarity from the government about what Brexit will mean. And there seem to be quite a variety of options that are being discuss. There's hard, soft, even no deal. And I'd like to know what kind of impact do you think the different versions of Brexit might have on your life and your career as an artist?
There would be this really scaremongering people who would tell you, well, you're out, you're going to get fired from this country, pushed out. There are the people who tell you, no, nothing's going to happen, don't worry. And amongst all these voices, We can't hear anything clear, as you said, from the government, and there don't seem to be any sort of policy coming out of it.
No.
So it's very, very confusing, and I think my way to go through it is... It's weird because in a way Brexit has empowered me in my work, because now I am this I have this voice that is relevant to the matter, and everything I say may not be always right, but I just want to keep on talking about it to people. That's pretty much all I can say. That's all that is in my power as an artist. But there's something really interesting. In the UK is where I developed as an artist. So all my practice and all the tools that I have to make a safe space in a rehearsal room, to develop empathy between actors or participants, you know, people who are not artists and who are just doing this as a amdram or community work. All the tools I know, I've learned them here in the UK. Mm. And how ironic is it that I feel that none of this could be even part of my mindset if I didn't learn it from here, from the British people. And now I'm using these exact same tools to provoke the debate with the people I live with here.
I mean, it's interesting. So just to pick up on something you were saying earlier about the contrast, perhaps, between the French and British view of having to have a fixed identity.
Yeah.
And what you were saying, that actually they didn't really care that much about who you were as a person or your ethnic origins, but they needed to know what your work was going to be like so they could put a label on that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering, it seems to me that you're saying, is there kind of, and stop me if I'm kind of putting words into your mouth here, but is it almost a reversal in the UK?
Yes, absolutely. It's exactly what I wanted to say earlier. Here in the UK, the first question you're asked when you arrive with your accent and your foreign origins, where are you from? And I remember loving that, because in France no one was interested, and I thought I was so rich of where I was from, but no one was really interested. Oh, okay, but what do you do? What are your views on this and everything? And here in the UK, this where are you from was at the beginning empowering, but then actually I realized that it doesn't go beyond. It sort of stops the conversation. Okay, I know where you're from, and you remain from there. So,
this, I'm not sure if this is something you've come across, but I do know people who are born in Britain, who just look a bit different, who are asked, "Where are you from?"
Yeah, but that's everywhere. Even in Mauritius, you have the reverse problem. You have a white Mauritian. There are many. Who get involved in the sort of, I don't know, little street argument, and a Mauritian, another Mauritian citizen, maybe a darker, would say, "Well, go back to your country." "Well, this is my country. What are you on about?" So this happens everywhere. It's something I've come to terms with, and it's in a way it is why I do what I do.
Mm-hmm.
But if the artists do it too, if they see it, if we start seeing people like merchandise, and if it's like the other day, again, another experience, I was in a panel at the Young Vic, you know, the director's program, and there were many, many directors in the room. And at one point, one of them, I think in a very simplistic way, said that she was fed up with... people going, spend 2 days in Germany and learning how German theatre is done, coming back and telling us how it's done.
What's that supposed to mean?
Well, exactly. And I asked her, so what's that supposed to mean? Is that, that's very summarized, I think. And then her response was, well, you see, it's all about Ivo van Hove at the moment. And I thought the argument was ridiculous. And I don't think... people can say some stupid things. It happens. But what was shocking is not her, is the nod in the room, is the general nod of everyone agreeing to this.
Somehow we don't expect that from our fellow artists.
No.
But I suppose, in a way, if artists are in any way reflecting or mirroring or part of their culture, that is going to happen. And I was thinking about a piece that David Hare wrote in The Guardian a while ago, basically expounding that same thought.
Yeah.
But what I'm wondering is, you know, because my feeling is we've become so polarised since Brexit. It's been such a disuniting moment in our cultural life in the UK. And I'm at a loss at how to re-engage, have a dialogue with people who feel that way, and it can manifest itself in many ways. It could be kind of an irritation with European theatre, or it could be downright xenophobia, or it could be worrying about bananas and their shape or whatever. And I'm just wondering how, as artists, what is there anything, or as people even, I mean, do you have any thoughts about how we can continue this conversation?
Declan Donovan received a award last year in Italy, and he made a speech about last year or the year before even. He made a big speech about empathy and how it's crucial to put back empathy at the center of pretty much every debate. So be it the Brexit or the migrants, the refugees. And what's really, for me, I'm optimistic for artists because we have all the tools. As I said, that it's here that I learned all these tools about putting empathy back at the center of a rehearsal room. And I think as artists, we have a duty to never forget this notion. Otherwise, everyone is just sympathetic with other people's issue, and people don't want to try to understand the other person's perception. If you've never been the other, and if you're always sort of legitimate in your environment, you cannot understand what it is.
Mm. And it's interesting you say that, because I'm just thinking about my own work with Paul as Wishbone. And our work is always about people who in some way are the other and the difficulty that they experience, but the ultimate redemption of finding connections. And perhaps something, I mean, not all theatre or all art is about that, but I think it is certainly something that keeps coming up again and again. I think maybe it's, as artists, we're always other in some respects, so yeah. We are very well placed.
Yeah.
Is there any advice that you would like to give to theatre makers or artists in general about how we should approach coming up with a response to Brexit and all the things that have emerged because of it?
There's a sort of intuition that everything that is happening is very related. Brexit, the election of Trump, even the gender equality, the Me Too movement, the refugee crisis, all of these topics, I think, they all address what is the ideal society that we want for the future. And so now that the new sort of battles and issues are informations, and it's all about social networks, and it's really a lot about getting people's attention. And we artists are really, really good at this. That's our job. We create narratives. We are storytellers. So we're the best people, and I really believe that, we are the best people to tell another story and to fight, I don't know, in the US to fight Fox News, and here to fight this big disinformation campaign that happened before Brexit. So I don't have really any advice. I think it's a more holistic view and approach on how do we make these conversations go another way. It's about, for me, and I wrote something about this, it's about changing the conversation. Whenever someone tells you, well, it might be a bit of a summary, but this sort of capitalist view on life that is within even the arts, whenever people have this view on things, you just tell them something else. Tell them another option, another viewpoint. We're good at that.
David Furlong, thanks so much. It's been fascinating and a real pleasure.
Thank you very much. Thank you.